Well, joining me now on the phone is David Yepsen, director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, a good friend of the show. David, thanks for joining me this morning.
It's good to be with you, Rick.
So as a member of the unbelievably dishonest political news media that you once were, I have to wonder, though, and we had Brandon Phelps on just prior to you, and here you have a conservative downstate Democrat who's being targeted for defeat by the House Republicans, by Governor Rauner. But I got to think there is a Trump factor that could play in downstate.
Well, I certainly think that's true, and that's one of the wild cards in this campaign. Donald Trump is an unconventional candidate. It's always been popular to beat up on the media, Rick. I mean, you and I have heard this before.
Not quite with this vehemence, you know.
Right. You have to go back to George Wallace's campaigns to see where this kind of vehemence is. And I don't know, even though we're a popular target, I don't know that it nets him that much with voters. We hate the press too, Mr. Trump, but what are you going to do for us? How does this solve some problem? And Donald Trump is discovering that, you know, a lot of media people, including me, didn't think he was really going to be a serious contender, didn't treat him as a serious contender. He was sort of a celebrity candidate. And as he started to do well, the scrutiny changes. Now that he's the presumptive Republican nominee for president, that media scrutiny is just going to get white hot, and everything he does is going to be under a lens. If you say you're going to raise money for veterans, okay, how much did you raise? Who got it? There's going to be a lot of, you know, if you have a Trump university, they're offering a degree program, and it's in court, the press is going to want to know, well, how did it work, what did you charge? I think the scrutiny is going to get white hot on him, and you know, he doesn't like it, and he lashes out. So we're going to see more of this.
But every time that, you know, he and the contradictions are fast and furious with Donald Trump, saying one thing, doing another, you know, but every time he gets four Pinocchios for not being truthful, it doesn't seem to have hurt him at all.
No, it doesn't. Although I wonder if there isn't some ceiling here or some threshold. It's one thing to capture a Republican nomination. It's another thing to win an election in November. And one of the things, Rick, that is hard to, I think, ascertain in this campaign is voters like what Trump says, many of them, but, you know, will they vote? There's an interesting discussion going on about public opinion polling. If you have telephone polls, and they have lots of limitations these days, you know, Trump doesn't do as well against Hillary Clinton as he does in some of these online polls.
Mm-hmm.
And so one question that that I certainly have as an observer of this process is, are people in the anonymity of an online poll willing to say they're for Donald Trump but are unwilling to tell a pollster over the phone that they're for Donald Trump? And we saw that with Tom Bradley, an African-American mayor of Los Angeles, where voters said, oh, yeah, we're for Tom Bradley. And then when they got in the voting booth, they did not vote for him. So, you know, I'm wondering if Trump hasn't tapped into something here. And in fact, there is an undercurrent of support for him. Certainly see a lot of support for him down here in Southern Illinois, as you noted, and legislators and politicians like Representative Phelps certainly have to respond to that.
Well, and I also wonder too, in a broader sense too, about you know, picking up on Springfield and that kind of thing, about maybe this anti-incumbency mood that might be out there, and indeed, you know, anti-establishment, anti-incumbency, and when you look at Hillary Clinton, for example, that almost represents an incumbency in some respects.
That's right. And this is another thing that's unprecedented about this campaign, is that both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have unfavorables much higher than their favorables. So a lot of voters are really confronted with a dilemma here. Who am I for? That's why you're seeing the interest recently in the Libertarian candidates. We've never been in these waters before, Rick. And I think it's an anti-incumbent mood. But, you know, people have always been kind of down on incumbents. They've been angry at Springfield for a long time. People are mad at the mayor in Chicago. But what's the alternative? What's the alternative? The old saying, you know, you can't beat somebody with nobody, I think is true. And so while people may be mad at Springfield, but they like their local legislator. And I think that makes it just complicates this whole political process that's going on in Springfield, where the politicians are incredibly nervous. And you know this from watching it. They see what's going on with Trump and all this anger and hatred, and they're spooked. And so, you know, they don't want to cut spending. They don't want to raise taxes. And we've been in a deadlock in this state for almost a year.
We're speaking with David Yepsen, the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, 8:19 on this Sunday morning. I'm speaking with David Yepsen, the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. David, just a couple of calls and texts that we got. They want to know, why doesn't the press get hot against Hillary and the Clinton Foundation funders? Why doesn't the press ask more questions about Benghazi? And, I mean, the questions have been asked. The answers are what they are. The investigations continue. The email server. This kind of goes to the heart of Hillary Clinton being such a polarizing figure.
Well, that's right. Certainly, Hillary Clinton's campaign does not feel like the press has underplayed Benghazi or emails.
Anything critical about Hillary Clinton, they never believe, you know, the press has been treating them right.
That's correct. And that's, you know, that's politics. That's understandable. Politicians love it when their opponent is getting gored in the media and hate it when the target comes on them. So, you know, you hear that from conservatives. Why aren't you doing more about Benghazi? Well, you look at the Fox News coverage of Benghazi, you know, the New York Times coverage of the emails. I certainly think the Clinton people feel like there's something there. And remember, too, at some point a story is reported. There's no more news here. Is there anything, any new developments? And certainly of the email controversy, the State Department issued a report that was pretty critical of Hillary Clinton. I think that did get pretty good media attention. But doing 5 and 6 and 7 stories about that, at some point a reporter said, there's nothing new here. I got to move on to something else.
We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Good morning, Rick. I wanted to ask you, and their views, when I think of vice president candidates, I think of baseball managers, that they probably can win you a lot of games, but they can lose it. But I think with this election, with both of these candidates being pretty unpopular and having problems within the party and their base, will they choose someone that appeals more to their base, to solidify the base? Or, as we know, usually in the general election, you have to try to go out to those independents or more in the middle as far as the vice president candidate. So that's my comment as far as the candidate choosing of the vice president candidate. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ron. And that is an interesting question. I mean, particularly among Democrats, where the fact we've got, you know, Bernie Sanders vowing that there will be a contested convention, even though it's pretty apparent that Hillary Clinton looks like she'll have the delegates to wrap up the nomination by Tuesday. But, you know, does a Hillary Clinton reach out and try to go left?
Absolutely. I mean, Ron's question is right where this race is right now. First of all, the candidates have to decide what sort of game they're going to play in the vice presidential pick. Are they going to go for a geographic candidate? Do they go to somebody that could balance them geographically? John Kennedy picking Lyndon Johnson in 1960. Today, that's not as important as perhaps a demographic choice. Bill Clinton picking Al Gore not because he had two Southerners, not because he was playing a geographic game, but because he wanted to send a message about a generational change in Washington. So Hillary Clinton, for example, now you hear a lot of talk about Elizabeth Warren. And I certainly think both candidates are weighing the pluses and minuses of who they pick. And, for example, Barack Obama picked Joe Biden in part because he wanted to strengthen his credentials as a in his expertise on foreign policy questions. The young senator, Biden, with old gray hair politician, you know, adds some gravitas to the ticket. So both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are weighing these kind of questions now. Ron's right about one thing. You know, if they get the vice presidential choice right, it's no big deal. If they get it wrong, it can really bog them down. If George McGovern and Thomas Eagleton, for example. But George Herbert Walker Bush had a real controversy in picking Dan Quayle. It was a big flap at the opening of the fall campaign. But at the end of the day, the vote cast is the vote for president, and George Herbert Walker Bush still defeated Mike Dukakis in '88. So important story now. Not the whole ballgame, though.
No, and of course, you know, a lot of focus as far as Donald Trump has been Newt Gingrich, and that would be somebody that would provide that kind of governmental link.
Yes, and Newt Gingrich would be a fantastic attack dog. I mean, you expect your vice presidential candidate to be out there lashing the opposition and going on the attack. Trump does a pretty good job of that himself.
And so does Hillary Clinton, for that matter.
That's right. She had a wonderful, very effective speech attacking Trump last week, as you mentioned. And the Democrats are clamoring for more of that sort of thing. But Gingrich would be a good balancing to Trump, issue-oriented, knowledgeable. And that's certainly an option for him.
Well, and one thing to note is that Gingrich also has been among these Republicans who've been very critical over Trump's comments about the federal judge and the Trump University suit as well. And I mean, it's kind of interesting, I think, when you see, you know, Paul Ryan, who, you know, finally offered his lukewarm endorsement of Donald Trump. But Paul Ryan says, you know, Trump's not going to take over this party. Mitch McConnell says that, and the Senate Republican leader. But the nominee does become the de facto head of the party, doesn't he?
That's right. And Donald Trump really needs to do something he's never done in his lifetime, and that's listen to other people. He's been a huge success following his own instincts and his own path. But people like Newt Gingrich, Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, they've been at this game for a long time, and he needs to have somebody who tells him, you know, you really can't take on a judge because of his ethnic heritage. The charge didn't hold water. It's just backfired. Look, we need to try to do what we can to appeal to Latino voters. 80% of them dislike it, Donald. You know, back off. Don't say that. And that's going to be very hard, I think, for Donald Trump to do. It's just not in his persona.
Well, let's, in just the couple of minutes we have left with you, David, let's go turn back to Springfield and the fact that, you know, here, if you think things couldn't get worse, it looks like it is, because actually you even have some infighting among the Senate and House Democrats over what an ultimate budget should be.
I know. And, you know, you've heard me say it's always darkest before the dawn in politics. And I thought for a year that perhaps eventually they would work something out, compromise would occur. But that doesn't seem to have happened. And now that you're facing the specter of K-12 schools not opening, it's sad, Rick. I see a lot of it in students who are not coming back to school because they can't get their assistance grants. You know, and then the state has just reached a perfect storm with the fiasco in the budget, the problems of leadership in Chicago, the situation with gun violence. And you would think that at some point the political leadership would come together and say, we have to start doing things differently. And you're closer to it than I am, Rick, but I certainly would hope that as this train wreck with the K-12 schools approach, that you'll see some people reaching some compromises.
That would be a hopeful sign, that's for sure. David Yepsen, director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. David, thanks so much for getting up with me this morning.
Thank you, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this.